turns in a circular motion. Love is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything. Anyway, you can be happy if you let yourself be. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Love is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything. Anyway, you can be happy if you let yourself be. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Love is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything. Anyway, you can be happy if you let yourself be. Life is a merry-go-round, and if you miss out this time, don't let it break your mind. Love will come round in the end.
Somebody's got in the middle. Make the flash. Nobody's got to look at the flash. Only one person is going to try the flash. Everybody look at the flash.
We're looking at the light.
Looking at the light, and as we shoot it, we direct the afterness to the floor. vibration can just neutralize. Everybody seen it? Everything that you started to feel is like you're moving your awareness to this. Don't try to block it. Don't try to come back to consciousness. Just hold it. I'll just try it again. Watch the flash and keep your eyes a bit after the image of the light and try and follow it as long as you can with your consciousness right down to the different levels. It's going into outward mental. Yes, watch the flash.
You keep your eyes open.
Yes, keep your eyes open and watch the flash.
Just watching it like
so, thinking about yourself. Yes, just do the flashlight, flash it, explore right in front of your eye and watch it.
Right.
Where are you going to? Look at the flash. Don't move and shut it up.
Five.
One, two, three, five. That's just to show you that it can go. That's why it's better to be in the middle so everybody can get.
Yeah,
stand
on there, man.
You want me to push the button to get the power?
You try it on the front of your thigh. Right. Can you bring it up in the air?
Looking at yourself.
and that level would automatically make your skin porous. Then you'll be seeing up front and behind, sideways, behind and forward, omnidirectional vision. Then you'll discover that you don't see with your eyes anymore. But something is seeing through you. Basically, the best something that didn't see has no will. It done direct motion in the body. Now you begin to recognize that it's called divine will be done, or this cosmic principle of light that is holding the image of your self-identity as it disassociates from the self. This function is actually what you're looking for, that's the state of the sound thought. You can experience it. You can find it experience it. It's rather just trying to do the experiment of one to where you can break the association with your concept of will, what is actually will. What is the actual will in you? The scripture says, nothing moves except by divine will. There is no experience except by divine will. But we can trigger or generate experiences by our so-called craving will or trained will. The action occurs from the place. And when you were withdrawing, you ended up at this mood, and yet you could keep your exertion control and make it your own will. You remember that? How futile your mind feels? Has it moved on its own? No. It would have gone away as you kept on watching it. The only way you kept retaining it is because you closed the eyes then. And you maintain what is called the after image of the awareness. So that the will now would suddenly be put aside for you to observe now the true you. The experiment is very, very instructive because it's used now to help the individual to go deeper into the levels of the brain. And the levels of the brain are very, very subtle and have to do with slow cycles, not fast. It trains you now to be more observant with the eyes and more attentive with the ears.
I could hear it was when I said the whole name. It's hard to describe, but it was just like hearing my whole body and that.
Alright, you bypass your mental will into your physiological will. With your mind, you think you can have a status thing. It can go nowhere. That's your psychological will. The physiological will is an entire different function. That's the true will. It's internally inside you, the physiological will. The psychological will is your subjective will, trying to hold. It assumes that it can hold the image. It feels that it can drop in some reservoir of force to stabilize it in the image to stay there. This is a big function on the psychological willingness. Now, what actually occurs is on a physiological level. The real cosmic will that holds the molecules of everything. The cohesive adhesive force, adhesion and cohesion, active force, are holding this together. Now, find a rapport after a while, and this rapport occurs in the spatial level at the point of diminishing, when the image starts to diminish. You see, you were able to hold on to it inside, and you took it from that level, and draw it in and hold it, and then start to steady it, so that is out of Now when it starts to disappear, and you're afraid of losing it, then you shouldn't with it, then you should go with it. That would be the break between psychological realm and physiological realm that seems now to be restored to body. Or this physiological oneness. Then that break, or that particular realization, probably the whole has to be omnidirectional vision. Yes, it's true, because you are on the verge of going through it. Now, you see how close you are to this inner experience. It takes many, many years of abstinence and deprivation to arrive at. So we don't have to take all that long time like before to get to the result that we're looking for. We can eliminate a lot of the extraneous practices to focus on where we're going. The reason why that type of long deprivation is brought on is because the brain is not trained to accept past reflexes as it does today in terms of what can be and so forth. Therefore, not even these reflexes have all come on as an accompaniment of an asset for us in this society. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to cook and then we'll either drop. The agricultural man don't have that type of stress. Now, the industrial man can, by these different changes, these different reflexes, he has actually developed certain conditions for the brain to go through these interchanges faster than the man who lives in the accepted society. So because one that accepted society has got certain ingrained traditions and taboos that are already not genuine anymore. They're still hanging around in the brain of that individual from its environment and act as an impedance. You know, they still look at water running through the pipe as something very bad, that work of a sinister creature of this day. And there's all kind of different mental aspersions to different physical laws that are there, to just natural laws, as magnetism and so forth. So they have got this whole mental block. And the more we explore these blocks and put the right perspective inside, then it's easy to go into what is called a sense of withdrawal, a sense of deprivation, to focus, thus breaking the association between psychological needs and physiological needs. The real strength of the individual is not in psychological needs. Psychological needs is the weak will, not the ego, not constantly trying to say can do something. But the real cosmic will is in physiological will, the cohesive bond of this mechanism. You know, this is the thing that holds together. This is where the tremendous force lies. This is in physiological will, not psychological will. Psychological will is that elusive will that is constantly pre-assuming that it can control a condition or an experiment from within or without, on the basis that it can draw from an unlimited energy pattern or unlimited energy reservoir. I've figured out, you know, like that feeling. It is with that peculiar type of attitude, but this is psychological will. Now, physiological will is the opposite. Psychological will is this aggressive drive to grab the whole thing like a crab or hold on to it. This makes the brain race down time. Physiological will is letting go and let it happen. Now you begin to see the difference between the two. The physiological will would be the cosmic will. See? And the psychological will would be the ego will or the individual craving to evolve. This particular phenomenon. Once you can go to the point where it seems to merge, so it's called the observer and the subject. When these two things become synchronized for the first time, where you have now a release or union, that's where one yoga comes in, that's where it's called yoga or union, because the union between these two poles, between a psychological pole and a physiological pole. And you're using seed, that's why I say meditation is seed, meditation by seed. You're centering the attention on an image as a seed, something objective, something related, which you saw, and then trying to synchronize and let it occur for the first time. And what occurs is what the yogi calls samadhi, a sense of at-one-ness. And your body begins to hear such a sound, you have made it, then slowly it becomes like a fourth dimensional experience. Vision or internal awareness now is omnidirection. Hence you get this term God or internal life practice. It's omnipresent. There is no way to say I am not but in here. And omniscient, because you can pull it all over, and omnipotent. These are really descriptive of this cohesive oneness from your psychological level to your physiological level, which is the bedrock of yourself. Now, the physiological level is not materialistic. Now, let us not kid ourselves regarding term physiological that is materialistic, but not. The physiological level is the cosmological level, because the essence of the substance of the thing seems to come from. You get it? That's why it's called the physiological level. Because when it takes a form, the form is just a substance, and that force that brings it together and holds it together is the cosmological will, or God's will, holding it. And it's your basic substance, because it's your basic you, that is going from psychological or program type attitude to internal construct attitude. Because your program attitude is what you feel to build up in you and what you think you can do in terms of handling your environment. But what is construct within you, as the molecules of atoms and so forth, this already is set. When you discover that part of the experience, you discover the vast reservoir of this particular realization. And that's where you try to get it. That's the actual inner reservoir that you want to get. And that's the real inner consciousness, and the real inner locking. You want to get to that point where the psychological will diminishes and synchronizes into the physiological will. It's the real you. And it's the most rewarding experience that you're trying to get in that level. Because hitting, that's what we call theta level. When you get there, you have this omnidirectional feeling, or one feeling, which is called the crisis. And it says, now, we can't stay there unless we have a program or work to stay in that state. And that's where you discover that the block or sins of karma, which are the blocks, they impede or seem to prevent you from staying there, because these blocks are like belts. They seem to pull you back up, make you float away from there back to the surface area instead of staying down and weighted down here. You seem to move back up. You see, you're not staying down in that reservoir. You're going back up. You're going back up to what it calls sexy level. So you seem to go back again into a psychological level, psychological will level. It's a sexy level. You're not staying down in it. If you're staying down in it, you wouldn't get sleepy. See? Now, this is, you're not getting sleepy, and you're tending to come out again back into the outer world. That means you're starting to float up. she's floating back up from the bottom of it. She's coming up to outside here and looking around. There am I trying to find the duck again. And the fish lives under the water and the wheel. But the coming up the surface is just occasional reaching for the outside. So trying to get sleepy or trying to get back to the outside here to pick up where you left off is the psychological attraction. It's the psychological will to control. And that's what we call the elusive will. That deludes us. That area of our inner nature tends to delude us, floating us up. We become like cork. Now to weight us down, to weight you down, is to take more centering of yourself. And then you float up. The floating up sensation is like a whole host of things trying to pull you up. So these are what you call your attractions. They're all tending to pull you away from the bottom to the top. And one of the things of floating up will be the ideal location, because it's nice to float up, you know. When you then in the actuality you want to move it in into the consciousness. You don't want to float out from it. So the more you go in and get weighted down in it, is the less attractions you have outside that will stop to you and pull you back up. In other words, your karmic patterns are like cork up to a big anchor. After a while, what will happen to the anchor? It'll float, right? So it'll all come to the surface, and that's not where you want it. You don't want it to come back to surface area, because there's too many corks attached to too many things to help it. And cork is a very light thing, so it's very deluding. It's a symbol of realizing how your true nature is. The true nature is rigid inside, strong. And more attractions that you have tend to pull you to the surface. So the more you are entangled with these blocks, they wake you up, they pull you up, they make you float up. Now as you cut away from them, as you chip away from these type of buoys, different conditions that tend to pull you to the surface to float, the more you precipitate them. Then when you end that state, you are now going on like a belt, a diving belt. You can go down and survive and work in that belt. And do your, what is called your spiritual oceanography. Then you are left back to because the discoveries are life under the sea. The different stars of the consciousness are related because as a self, we evolved out from there. So we have to go down into that mechanism to see these physiological stars on an omnidirectional experience. And then we have now this oneness with life. Because what is the human body but a chain mail or a whole cloth of cells? We're all locked into one. But if you can go down to that greater level and get the experience of one enclosed feeling and in all directions, then you automatically can see the link bond with it. And you can come up back on the physiological level into the psychological level. So modern man is closer towards realization than primitive man. Simply that modern man has made more effort to be born modern from primitive society. You can't have a modern body or an industrialized body unless you went to primitive who made all the efforts to disassociate by long deprivations and monasteries and long trek through the desert, long trek up the mountainside, and going in all these different civilizations into solitude and seclusion, self-chosen seclusion, to get to this level of inner composure. So to be born now in an environment where all these reflectors should be put to the test, and then suddenly find yourself exposed that to a drop in consciousness that you can orient to. Now, we are in a position right now in this industrial complex working towards an internal unity, is preparing the body for the next incarnation that would put us in a far more complex society that may not occupy something, that may be occupy space stations or different areas in other life support systems, where the ability to drop down from psychological real level into physiological real level seems to be normal at age 1, 2, and 3, continuing on. And we would have this ability of dropping down deep levels faster, because we would be called upon to use them in an environment that is already caught up with some of the basic changes to provide for this unusual sensibility of the human being. What is called divine expansion. This is the journey of divine expansion. You see, because right now we are in beta level. We've left a lot of beta levels to come into alpha level in this industrialized system. We're now trying to work in the alpha level to put us into the society that we're behind us, paper level. So when a primitive man in the next environment would be considered an alpha. An industrialized man today would look at a primitive man and call him beta. The primitives are in beta. Now we have moved out from beta to alpha. We can do a lot of things in alpha and work with alpha. And we're preparing ourselves now, inwardly, for our future environment. So when we come from born in a future environment, a primitive would be an alpha. And those born with this unusual ability to drop down into the level would be in theta. More and more, according to the master in autobiology, the yogi, all these levels are set up. We are evolving into this divine nature. But nevertheless, time has tripped right through from beta all the way down into delta. And some of us can go all the way back into omega. We do have a few that go through like that. Because those individuals have learned how to disassociate from any type of attachment to psychological will, and can lock into psychological will. This is what they call the desire of action. Action without craving. Now it's not so easy to do. We have too many distractions, too many confrontations, too many different reflexes that we flip up. It's when you're able to master alpha and stay stationary, then the control of these other levels will come
out. I was noticing that when I was watching this, it was still aware of just by watching this.
Now you see your discovery. It's such a marvelous self-discovery of the basic rules of spiritual training. When you apply what has been given as discipline from the outer world, from the beta level, as a religious background, you will start to see why it is working there. How come certain things can work? And now, if you suddenly realize that it's going away, and if you give it love, it will start to magnify. I feel like it's not a fly, it feels like a bullet. that's what is the more shattering part of it. The more love you have, and the more non-relationship you have with anything, that means the more you're unattached, the image starts flying through you. You become the focal point of it. Instead of staying away from you, instead of you looking, it's becoming you now, it's rushing towards you. Right, but you have a problem, then it starts coming, there's a confusion in your mind between psychological, physiological, your pattern, which is to have supremacy. Your fear is that you don't want to give that particular energy level control of this physical level, because you don't know what's going to happen. But nothing can really happen except the two things are passing into each other.
I feel like
our center is psychological. I'm sure you can, that's why this particular experiment is good for you. To see the difference between what is your psychological view and your physiological view, where you're placing the emphasis on things about yourself. You see, you're placing the emphasis on psychological view to represent ourselves, to give ourselves a sense of confidence. Then in actuality, the sense of confidence really comes from the physiological view. Now, it's the psychological view that triggers the psychosomatic condition in the body. That's what triggers it. The psychological view continues reinforcing symptoms that are psychosomatic. And then physiological view eventually satisfies, because there's nothing else to do than to provide an outlet for that reinforcement. So on a physical level, the pattern would start coming through as a pain condition, as a pain memory, at the external experience level. Now, until we can resolve this particular attitude by releasing it and accepting it, the psychological level is elusive and is not real, and allow the physiological level to start pushing through. It will be very, very painful in the early part to let it go, because certain images will come up that have been suppressed physiologically and are going to be confronted psychologically and may not be very pleasant. And therefore, you are put into two conditions. One, the same ridiculous view you are when it's happening. Three, lack of the knowledge of how much control you can let go or be capable of holding yourself in composure when it happens. So this one makes you feel outsourced to yourself. And the normal conclusion of the brain would want to assume or state is that it don't belong. But it's very normal for it to be that. You see, that you would follow the least line of resistance, the least line of resistance in the brain to arrive at that conclusion. It's when you don't fight it and you begin to accept it and go along with on the 2 or 3 repetitions, this is where the therapeutic level comes from now, repetitive action of the brain. You begin to see now not only the self-discipline by repetition, but the therapy from repetition. The therapy is dosage, and self-discipline is also dosage. It's a reinforcement principle, so that it starts correcting itself. Now, we all do feel sorry for ourselves and kill ourselves. We all got this kind of problem. Many of us at least, but we don't even know what it's like. It's down there, it's a little big, you know, like a balloon. It's complicated enough. But until, and it's a very, very interesting way of image release, of the images that are included up by the psychological gaze to be important to the consciousness. And once you can actually go into it, sometimes all these things start to open up. And crying or hammering or kicking is one of the levels. Some researchers have gone to the point where they call it bionetics, or the energy of the body itself from the confrontation, making the individual want to stamp and shout. But it's actually psychological release for the painful experiences. They're very strong. And what is interesting about it, if you observe when the pain came on in any death, there is always a color associated with it. A very significant association. And the color keys you or cues you in what psychosomatically or psychologically is impinging and causing the reinforcement. And if you can think back before the bulb was flashed about the painful sensation, what color comes to mind? You don't have any mental reservation, so automatically you'll give a particular color, which would indicate the shock accurately, then the release will come, or the feedback will come. So usually you find it in everyone, right? Usually you'll find most of us will have a sort of a color, no color, then you get to raise a color, or automatically find a color library. But always a tussle or a struggle to go through that decision point. Well, the unblocking is remembering when it first began. To recall even in a slightest way when the sensation began and what color would come to your mind from the sensation. The trouble manifesting in the body is a result of the shock or the stress that leads up to it in a matter of 24 hours or 3 days or 4 days that the stress is needed for culmination point for the actual experience. So the experience itself, when it's done at all, would carry a color. But it's already programmed into it to bring it about. So a good example of a person who was not too long here ago, patient, had a lot of problems and could not know why suddenly one day the whole city of his body gave him collapse. And she went to a lot of doctors, been going to them for a long time, and yet each one she went to a series of different types of, so she knew. So you said anything, she didn't do it. Usually people don't come to me until they give up the bag. Go home to stay and remain as they are. So I had the case history, I didn't have to ask the case history of a different diagnosis. And she kept telling me. Then she said, well, what do you think? I'm gone. I said, well, that's all good and fine. You got it all. God, what did the doctor tell you? But let's find out something else. I'm going to ask you a stupid question. What color comes to your mind when you think of the problem? She said, what do you mean color? Who thinks of a color? No one thinks of a color now, okay? They can't decide what triggered the problem in her. All they can decide is a certain physical result. What triggered it? And she told me the color. And Oh, she didn't want to come to the color. It took a while for her to decide it again. She said, well, I don't see any color. All I could think of some sort of thing. Who can say color? Me or not color. All I know is in my back. Well, I think it burns a lot. It burns a lot. It hurts, and then it hurts. So we'll pick a color. How can I say what color is burning me? Well, it's a try. Yeah, well, it's red. I thought, you said it, you selected it, but you decided. I don't know why, it's red. The physiological will released the actual impact of the shock from that level to the conscious mind. It decided it. Then I mean, she said that when I said, shut the lifestyle. I mean, she even picked it up. It was a test of my lifestyle. And I said, do you realize what you just said to yourself? Then it dawned what she did say. The wrong portion of the communication left the net unconsciously releases. And then she began to describe what really touches her lifestyle. Her husband came back from the war. And she was accustomed to working in this city. Everything is going fine, nothing to worry about. And often, suddenly he's going to buy a farm and he's going to go and start covered in sheep and hogs. He's going to be deprived of his beautiful city life. You know? So that was definitely a threat of her life. She didn't want that. Couldn't cope it, but it was eventually after 2 or 3 weeks in the farm, I was busy moving around all the things that made me organized. Body has to collect. Subconscious mind did not want to get up in the morning and throw the cock on the yelling at the cat or the screeching at the cow or so. It refuses to respond, so throw all the overload into the conscious mind. That's automatically the trigger. But just she saw the whole pattern, as she reviewed that, she saw how it came back. Her whole mind starts sitting up. She was so gallant about it with the anguish and the anger that she tells me on a conscious level, well, I forgive him for taking me there. But psychological forgiveness, but not psychological forgiveness. You know, the big difference between the two levels. And every time she closed her eyes, there's a pain or flashback of the incident. She forgives her husband, yes, on a psychological level, she has to put up with it. She's grounded with it. This is the life. I've forgiven it. Yes, the body, in the real sense of the word, is not accepting psychological forgiveness. It wants physiological forgiveness. Yeah. You see, this is why we say to forgive and to forget. But Jesus didn't say, Father, forgive them and forget them. Father, forgive them for they know that's what they do. Yes, their father forgive them, forget them for what they did. Physiological forgiveness is forgetting. Whereas psychological forgiveness is the amenities one makes for another person. And inwardly say, well, okay. But then physiologically, it's not that okay. Because somewhere you're just going along the situation to put on appearances. And there is anguish, there is tension. So you can go into your meditation and observe. That's why sometimes they use a rose or flame or candle. These are all basic ways to get numb into that level. But getting numb into the level is to know what you're looking for, what to recognize when you're there, and how it's not to come back too fast, to let it go on to its completed level. The reason why the teachers in olden days used to say, don't be, you can't do it by yourself and you need a teacher and all these things. Simply because we were living in an unconscious society where the mental blocks were so different and the complex nature of man striving to cope with natural laws. do it by difficulty. But if they don't do it by itself, let you go off and off on a tangent, this would be true. But we have outgrown a great deal of the patterns of thinking we don't think of them now and they used to think of them thousands of years ago. They come to accept natural laws in nature, in physical things. And they become to realize that when you go in, there is no cellular pitchfork looking for you. The psychological part of you is the pitchfork. And the physiological part of you is the knight in shining armor. And you're actually rescuing your sense of identity, which is amazing. This is the story about St. George and the maiden from the dragon. This is the actual internal confrontation between physiological will, psychological will, and sense of rationality. Where do you place this, the emphasis on rationality? This St. George is your physiological will. The dragon is your psychological will that's consciously pulling you back in. And rationality is the good. Sense of balance. And therefore, as you go in now, you know this dragon force field, that's why they call beta level, the dragon level actually, it's the level of consciously high higher cycles that keeps pulling you up. It's the same name for Satan, for the serpent, the delusive pull of the psychological view. And the physiological view is the real Lord. Yes, they're very good. They're a very good prompter to indicate when you're in the level. But you do need a series of experiments to make it valid or work, but it's just an ordinary unit. Remember, it's a measuring device, number one. You have to think a little differently. It's not a device that's going to make you super conscious. That's not it. It's not intended. I'll give you an example of what I mean. That's 12 inches, right? You just roughly say that's 12 inches. How do I try to use 12 inches? How do I guide myself to use 12 inches? So I find myself a ruler, right? And I must have the same type of breaking up, right? To go and measure it. So this is a measuring device. So this is the condition in space. And I need a ruler to do it. That's a device to help me with this particular condition in space. But this object that's existing in space can be measured this way. Can be measured this way. And can be measured this way. Get it? I can have the length, I can have the breadth, and I can have the depth. All around I can do the measurement with a ruler. Length, breadth, depth. Okay. We call it a bathtub, for sake of convenience. Now a bathtub will roll around in space. Let's say, shoot it in space like a balloon. Floating bathtub will float around. How are we going to measure? Let's say you're on the Earth here, Measuring space time.
Ah! There's so many feet up on it. And here you are. You want it to come back to you. And you shoot it up. So, you're going to measure its motion now. How do you measure its motion with what? You measure its motion with another type of a ruler. Circular ruler. And then you got a circular ruler. And you put the circular ruler with indicators. But that's a ruler too. This you call a watch. That's what it really is actually. You're measuring the motion of this object going up and coming back down to the ground. The time it took to go up, the time it took to go down a certain distance. With a different type of ruler now. Instead of a straight ruler, you're measuring it now. Because if you shoot it up, it's not going to fall back right here. This object is, this whole thing is moving too, in relation to another thing. But it takes a certain amount of time for it to get back to that point. This point may be over here in the space of 60 seconds. Or let's say in the space of 10 minutes. Here would be actually here. In the motion relating to another object. But you don't notice it because it's too relatively small for you to realize that. But you're using a circular watch to do that. Now the Alpha machine is also a ruler for going from one pressure level to another pressure level. See? So you have a way of measuring this particular wave. Now, the brain normally, when it's measuring, the Alpha machine will be there. And let's say you have a dive, and then the scan meter will go up and tell you that you're in beta at this point. This point is beta. Now, in 10 seconds you move this much forward. 15 seconds, 20 seconds, hour, 2 hours, 4 hours away over here, meters over here, 40. That tells you how long it took the pressure to come down to say that you are in Alpha level. Indicating how long it takes you to get in there. The needle is giving us an indication of how long it's taking the brain to slow down. Now, when it's actually registering on the graph or the calibration, by the time it moves and it stays there for now, you are in equipment. So they usually use one or two ways. They use a needle to indicate how long, or they use a beeper. Some kind of a signal. So you hook it on, and then you go. As you're getting closer to it, then you it's cutting off now. So when you're in it, or if you were to watch it on a watch, it took you that amount of seconds to get to the start to start the steady. It starts going So once you recognize that, you recognize a certain feeling of how the brain and the body feels when it's at that level. So you can actually tell when you're in orbit. And you can tell when you get out of orbit. Beep, 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 beep. It's like with the Roadrunner.
You ever see those that part is a Roadrunner?
It's really like a Roadrunner. It goes and stops, you know. It's a funny phenomenon. You just like you pull up brakes and you start going in the opposite direction. After you hit a slow wave, then all of a sudden it starts back and forth. Alright? Some of the sensations that follow alpha shutdown, or alpha escape, is a type of a drowsy feeling. This is one of the excuses of comedy, because brain is slowing down. The drowsy feeling. I didn't hold on to that condition now. Feel it. How long you can stay in it before the BBB again. This is the development of staying in that level. Now, working in that level is the important thing. Arriving to that level and recognizing that level is your first orientation. Now, working in that level is different. How can you work in that level? Working in that level is the art of sprinting at that orientation. You're busy sprinting, you see. That's why they say you have to have the eyes half open, half closed. You look at the pictures of saints and their eyes all seem to have all these different artists, they draw them with their eyes half open, half closed. The sprint is the focal point of working in that level. Because you are actually trying to stay at the borderline state, wide open, it again. And close down, then shut down. But then in between is where you sit. Now, your brain would cause the body to get hot. So the first thing we do is to check if you are alpha ready. And so give you what is called not a machine that will check my pulse. This machine here is hooked up, and that's where we have the ADT is considered the measuring point. And the needle is here. And we want you to read it now, 20 degrees. But the one day the needle moves this way, or that way, anyway. See how long it takes you to move the needle, how many degrees. Moving, or heat is getting the body hot. 98 points. So much is internally inside, not surface tension. Surface tension is always a 3 point something. Internally it's 98, and it's pushing back inside, or in the rest of the energy. But the surface tension is 3. Now they hook it on, so funny phenomenon. What thing they look at them? Hook it on to. They don't hook it down to no other finger. You ask them why, they say, well, this is the most practical one, because it's just the way they have found it. They don't know why they arrived at this one finger, or this other hand. But they arrived at three out of the five fingers, the most practical finger to hook it to. Yet when you come back to realize that this thing is called the superheater. We are talking about heat, raising the heat. Superheater. Now, the top of this finger here, this portion is the head. They have the highest peak. The next portion down here is the next highest peak. And this here is the lowest peak. That is released to the head, from here to the neck, and from the neck down to the groin, which is the second joint, and from the groin down to the foot. It's hooked into the arm itself, the hand itself, the palm. And it's called triple heater. Or triple warmer. This is actually a physical rheostat set up in the body. The line of energy that's passing through. You don't have an organ in the body called triple heater. But the closest thing that would seem to have this phenomenon is the pericardium. And it would run through the pericardium line, right? And it's called the triple heater. Now, the brain, if the body is cold or hot, you can regulate it. And rotation on this is the finger, either one. You can raise the heat of the body by turning it 2 times forward on the top end. If it's too hot, you want to raise the heat in the head. You want to raise the heat in the foot, you have to rush the bottom part 2 times forward. You want to lower the heat, you turn it 1 time backwards. It's just like that. On a wall. It's amazing. Your built-in rheostat. Your built-in temperature control. But they hook it to the part of this part here to the head to see how you can raise the temperature. And then they start you off at 83.7 or 83.8 between there. So, okay, now see how long it takes you to raise the temperature. 1 degree, 2 degrees, 3 degrees, and go up. And it's interesting how long some people take even to get 2 degrees up. And you can be pushing me just going to and you're working, just goes to show you the psychological will and physiological will, the real tug of war of the truth about yourself. Psychological will believes and knows and is convinced so thoroughly that it can raise the temperature up on the surface area. And physiological will knows pretty darn sure it's going to be 98 inside and it'll take you pretty wide to for it to turn loose to go 2 degrees from 83 to 85. That's physiological will. And you sit there and you struggle and struggle. Some people take an hour to get 2 degrees up. Those who have done any degree of meditation can raise it. Just because meditation is a half awake, half asleep state. If the individual begins to realize that it's a form of physiological relaxation and physiological will control, not psychological will control, when you start to sit and condition your body. So the temperature will go up because of that person, the one who meditates. Because he's learning to let go psychological will and allow physiological will to run the body. So when you sit down to meditate, you center your mind and it's obvious. The moment you close your eyes and put it up here, you can actually feel the sensation of the body shutting down. You think you'll get cold. Ain't true. You don't get cold. You psychologically think you're getting cold, but physiologically you're getting hot. On that meter, it start rising pretty fast. The more you think you're cold, the hotter you are feeling. And the more you think you're hot, it's going the opposite. It's going back on cold. Oh yeah. This is because of the illusion of psychological relationship and physiological relationship. One is an illusion. The yogis or men in the East at one point realized that this is a phenomenon of association. That this world that we call our world on a psychological level is an illusion. But in a physiological level, it's not an illusion. In a physiological level, it's an actual realm, but it has this dualistic place. Between psychological control of it and physiological control of it. Now, they use the word physiological, but it's not a correct term. It's a cosmological control. But we have to relate the substance in some form. We can't throw away the substance. The substance is there in some way to relate. And in essence, it's energy. We know it's energy, and it's cosmologically, it's there, and it's controlled by certain internal laws, all is going to maintain pattern. This is very consistent. So, for that reason, we say physiological, but outside of that, just believe and think. This very simple structure is believe and think. Now, it can control its own density and its relationship outwardly, mentally. Then, in actuality, it doesn't do that. Then, it learns the lesson of letting go. From the illusion of trying to trigger this control and let the control occur from within, until it will let go, let God, outwardly, mentally. Then in actuality, it doesn't do that. and it learns the lesson of letting go from the illusion of trying to trigger this control and let the control occur from within. That's what it says, let go, let God, not let go, let the psychological conditions dissipate and let the cosmological forces work without impedance. Then these forces will start vibrating and they are measurable now. So you will find that even if you didn't do anything, you just relax and go. And just close your eyes and listen. Just look at that. That needle will go right up faster without any effort. You'll just walk. So the more you struggle to raise the temperature with your will from a psychological level, the more you don't go. And the more you forget the whole thing and say, okay, the thing goes right up fast. And there you really learn the lesson of let go, let God. That's the way of semantically saying it. In truth, essence of the thing is the psychological control is diminished for physiological control. Okay. You take a siesta. Basically, that is the best way to go on a machine to measure. You see, the machine is just a measuring device. Measuring to tell you where true relaxation occurs, and how it occurs, and how to bring it about. It can be brought about with certain cues. You won't take a siesta like that and let it measure. Truly, you get warm. Now, if the room is cold, the worst thing you can do is trying to keep warm. You get colder. But if you just sit back and comfortably pull at the push up, and forget the coldness in the room and start getting warm. You see? Because you'll find a comfortable position no matter how strange it is, you'll automatically see yourself going into a position that would be comfortable to you, very uncomfortable to others. But you'll start to warm up. Strange to see. And this is measurable. Your body will start, surface temperature will start rising to compensate for its temperature. Astral level is in your paper level. It occurs in paper level. And you don't really travel. You would have experienced astral disassociation. That's what the word really means, not travel. You would experience astral disassociation if you had continued to follow the image in the brain, that is with the flashlight, till then you merge with it, being the psychological control and the physiological control, where you begin to experience oneness. You have what is called a sensory disassociation from the physical body. Now, because you have this sensory disassociation from the physical body, you begin to see yourself outside of your body. That's a very poor expression of saying, you know. For the first then, you have what is called a cosmological vision that you really is. You never was in your body in the first place. But it's very hard to test the body, never in his body at all, you see. You just can't grasp that kind of a stimuli that really you're never here. What the real me is around you. But it, from a physical look, that don't make sense. But if you can draw it, this is what it will look like. Now, this would be actually what the physical body is here to be. But the real me would be something like this. Dotted line is the real me, but there's no way I can touch the real me. All I can see to touch is the illusory me, this part. So because I have what is called inverse stimulation from the real me, bombarding me. This is my psychological way to make me think, here I am, this is where I am, this is me. Because this real me is pushing this way. It's what you call cosmological pressure. So the adhesive cohesive function of the atmosphere, if you were to take away the atmospheric pressure, this is the pressure on the surface area that gives to the brain a sense of reality of the resistance. Now if you were to take away this pressure from the whole entire surface, what would happen to the body? It would just blow apart, right? So we're only kept together by this, so this condition called the real me. Giving this some kind of an actuality, this is not an actuality, it's an illusion. The real actuality is this, this four fields, this is the real actuality. Now, when you have the internal experience of going in this direction, that's where you get a feeling of projection. You're really not projected. What has happened is that you've broken the internal stimulation on the surface of the skin by slowing down the brain for the first time. And to have this part of the body now lose all type of sensation. And therefore you see yourself on sense. You begin to have this type of experience. The real you is here now for the first time by disassociation. From inside. You made your disassociation from inside of yourself to cause this condition to be observed and look back up. In other words, it's like a TV screen. The two pictures are out of focus. They don't seem synchronized. But it's the same way it is. It's off. And this gives you the feeling that you're outside and that something is connected to you. That you can go floating off in space. This is the feeling. Yes. Right. That's exactly what it is. Now you start, but so don't block the mind to the real experience and just lock on to the attitude of astral projection, because then you're losing off what is the actual reality of what's happening. You're getting carried away with the illusive reality. That's not the real reality. The real reality is that you, for the first time, you are experiencing the real you that holds this physical you together as a unit. You're experiencing your true self holding it together, and therefore you seem to be down there looking down at yourself. Now that the down there is the illusive you, the real you is here looking at it, projecting. Now this real you has to get back into phase with it, otherwise that one can't get up and walk. So the conflict will always be in between the two. That this one will feel it has to go in there. That one will feel that it has to come out here. See? It's a pull of the movement. Now, once there is no confusion, then you realize that there is no such thing as astral projection. There is a condition called electrical expansion. The cells have now opened up their electrical nature to give you now like emission. So from the Kirlian camera, you begin to see this type of emission the steering camera will be in the picture. The emission started to be greater than this. So when you photograph a person supposedly under the sensation of astral projection, the body has a vast emission of light. And therefore the range of control or the range of feeling or the range of identity seems to be out of space. And because this is reaching out space and thinking of that going on, this particular movement would seem to touch every unit of space. So you see my astral body can go any space I want. It gives that particular feeling. So basically to see, to take away this line, you are there. Automatically you are there. And this is what is actually happening inside. Now because this is the pure electrical energy flow, the first time. Now the certain writers say, in my soul I am free. In this movement, you are truly free. Because you're not bound, you're not limited no more. Right. The psychological part is gone, and the truth of the logical part is flowing. There you have your first now, the difference between how it's called astral projection and only present. You experience it for the first time, omnipresent. This is the true experience. If you keep on holding on to this type of a condition, then you will say you're having projection. But if you don't hold on to that condition and you just let it flow, as I said, you can merge, which is actually a state of mind, you will have omnipresence or oneness, which is really called samadhi. You have the sense of at oneness. This sense of at oneness is there, with everything going on. Now, coming back in is a phenomenon. This starts to shrink down, and this starts to build up. And this builds up into a circle to converge on your physical body. This here diminishes. But it can diminish more than certain area. So what has really occurred, instead of projection, you had a space. Inside of you. You had a physiological emission of this real you, the pure energy that is trapped into this core called a body now, and condensed into this. This energy now moves out in all directions, producing the illusion that you went someplace. So cosmic consciousness or God-realization is total memory. Now you understand how to say it's only total memory. The total memory of past, present, and future, all occurring now. So this is what they call the oneness. So past life, future life, present life, all commingle as one. Now, the advantage of the experience on the stable level is how to make use of the present body form and go out when you are ready to leave it, not being pulled out of it, but you can leave it on your own volition, that's where the Delta level is, and carry with you certain qualities that you want to retain.
That's
the reason for the whole thing. So, but when you carry these qualities into the Delta level as you go out, this is where it says, Jesus carries certain qualities in his own body when he is ready to die. He says, give good care, for I will come to the world, Father forgive them. These qualities were all incorporated in ready to God, and he gave up the ghost on the cross. That means he didn't physically die on the cross. He just dropped down into Delta level, and in Delta level, the body would show no indication of physical symptoms that pertain to life. Now, on a stethoscopic level, not on an electrical level, if you touch the heart of the man Jesus on the cross, no telescope would do that. And if you stuck him with a probe, no grunt or hum would come out of it. These would you consider on a sonic level. Now, but on the ultrasonic level, or the supersonic level, he was much alive as you and I. But he's in a Delta level of the brain now. Delta level of the brain, brain is reconstructing.
Deep sleep.
In a deep sleep, yeah. But such a deep sleep, but fully conscious, not dreaming, but fully conscious of the matrix of how the thing is held together. You understand? That is the state now. So when they stuck him with the spear, he didn't grunt. Water and blood came out. But the man is not trained to know, he's not a physician, how will he know a dead man from a living one? All he knows, grunt means alive, no grunt means dead. That's all he's concerned. Report to the centurions and they tell the big Caesar, man is dead. As far as the initiate at that time, the knowledge was so secretive, he couldn't expose it to much. They were very fortunate to have that much physiology to retain. They knew he wasn't there and he was in another level. Now, when they wrapped him up in the sheet and put him away with the herbs and everything, then he went from Delta to Omega level. It's in the Omega level now, where that matrix or that archetypal pattern is maintained and can decide if not to rot or to materialize and dematerialize or take the body itself. It's in that level. That's why he says, I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the start and the end. It's in that level, this mechanism now sheds the quality of having a shadow. It sheds the quality of decomposition. It sheds the quality of imprint, that is to indicate weight. Because it's all pure energy, right? It's just another level. But the only thing that is going to give it some credence that it is a man, Jesus, is the archetypal relationship maintained from the